Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and today we're going to be talking with you to start the show about cooking wild game and fish. Our guest, Chef Joel Olson, back with us once again. Good to have him here. He's a nationally recognized culinary instructor for children, youth, and adults, and has 20 years of teaching experience. He has a big game feed every year, and we'll talk to him about what he served. I have a look at the recipe at the menu, and it's unbelievable, actually. We'll talk with him about how he prepares game and fish. We can talk about that game feed, and certainly we want to hear from you. What would you like to know about cooking with any wild game or fish? What's your favorite way to prepare? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Chef Joel Olson, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Well, thank you.
You do a lot of instruction. You work with children, maybe teenage types, yep. And then with adults as well. How does that all develop?
Well, I started teaching, years ago when I realized that I liked cooking with people instead of for people. Mm-hmm. It was a huge distinction in my career, and I got on staff at L'Académie de Cuisine, where I went to school in Bethesda, Maryland, after graduating, and just kind of burgeoned from there and been doing it ever since. It's not closer to 25 years now than, geez.
Oh, man. Well, I tell you what, it could be a lot of fun. I've actually taught some, Scott Craven and I taught some cooking classes. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was really a lot of fun to cook with people.
Absolutely.
Well, let's talk about game feeds for a minute. First, maybe you talk about what is a game feed.
For me, a game feed is just a celebration of – it used to be when I first got back from – I'd come back to Wisconsin after living in Bethesda, and I'd have my friends, and I did a pig roast the first year, and then I started doing wild game feed, just cooking up the stuff that was in people's freezers and making this – just turning into like a party, basically, with my friends.
And you have a very extensive menu. I can think about my – I've done some wild game feeds, too, and done maybe 20 or 25, I think, different dishes. Mm-hmm. But then I'm looking at you, and here I'm seeing 60-something
Well, we try to
cook. How the heck do you do all that?
It takes about a week.
Yeah, it does.
No, and I cook things beforehand, and I know what to freeze. And one of the things I really try to do this year with this amount of items, and they're not all game items too, which really kind of helps with people because it gives people that don't want the game, even though my game, I think, is just tastes as good as any other food. You wouldn't know that it's venison or elk or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Or you would know, but it's delicious. But eat a lot of other options, vegetarian options, because it allows couples. It's not just a guy's hanging out drinking beer and eating chunks of venison. It's sophisticated food.
I've done it for my department, Life Sciences Communication, and a few times. And, you get 100 people at your house.
Yep.
You want weather that's nice so that there are people can be outside as well
or,
as in.
Or wear your duck clothes.
Yeah, or wear your duck clothes. John and Toma has something for us. Hi, John.
Oh, yeah, I'd like to share a recipe that I love for grilled venison.
Yeah?
Yeah. I like to marinate it in soy sauce, garlic, oil, any kind of oil seems to do all right, and black pepper for at least 4 to 12 hours. And I like to have them cut about at least 3/4 inches thick. It seems to work pretty well. And then get the grill very hot, and 3 to 4 minutes on a side or so. And you want to make sure it's a little bit pink in the middle. I know a lot of people don't like that, but if you go over that point, it seems to just, the flavor just goes downhill. You got to have that little bit of pink.
Well,
it seems to work well. It's very delicious.
Yeah, and John, thanks a lot for calling. Joel, that's a pretty straightforward recipe there.
Absolutely. Just gets a nice crust on the outside, cooked to perfection, nice and juicy. And John's absolutely right. When you... Either you have to cook it forever or you have to cook it very briefly because in the middle it gets tough and gamey.
Yeah.
And that's what people say they don't like wild game is because they've had it like that.
Yeah. So a little rare in the middle or at least medium.
Yep. And it's hard to tell with a really dark meat sometimes where it's at, but you can tell by the texture and how it gives, how well done it is.
How would you compare, what about other types of wild game then, other than venison? Let's say pheasant, What about pheasant and its preparation? Is it like a chicken in your mind?
Yes, it's because the other carries salmonella for sure. You want to make sure you cook it to 165. It's got to be done.
Yeah, and the same with duck and goose.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, I was trying to think about a time. I don't think I've ever not cooked pheasant, duck, and sort of grouse.
Right. You would never do like carpaccio of duck or carpaccio of, you know, or cannibal sandwiches of mallards or something like that. No, not advised.
No. Well, let's take a look at some of the recipes in your latest game. Describe the game feed itself first, the one that you...
Well, this year was kind of extensive because when I turned 50, I did a 50-course dinner, and this year I turned 60, and I was going to do a 60-course dinner, but I morphed that into the game feed is how that got to be so large. So it was that's why it was game feed 60-60. And so it's a very much variety of foods, like I mentioned, non-game things. But it's a real collaborative effort. I've got some wonderful friends that come in and set up the yard and do the tables and do the decorations and lighting. And it's a process, a couple-day process. And I start cooking, and I know how to freeze things. I've got a bunch of refrigerators at home. And so I did just do a lot of stuff, anything I can do ahead of time. The biggest rush for us is when we put out the food. It's just putting out that many dishes at one time, putting out like 20 entrees and trying to get them all hot. We had two stoves. But it's just logistically a challenge, but it's really fun.
It really is. And, you know, when I've done it, I literally have sat down and like two or three, you've got to make up a set of directions for yourself.
mine was like 10 pages long, just like a chart, basically,
yeah,
to keep track of everything.
Basically, at 8 o'clock in the morning, you're doing this, and at 8:30, you're doing that, or, you know, it's just, but that, if you don't do that, it's not going to work.
Even people having a small dinner party need to do that just to keep track of everything, especially if you want to have a beverage with your guests.
Yeah.
Write it down so you don't have to think about it.
You want to enjoy it too.
Absolutely.
Well, let's take another call. By the way, you can join in too. Maybe you've got an experience to share or a question to ask about wild game. Maybe you've done a game feed. What are your experiences? What have they been, either in preparing one or in attending one? Love to hear from you, 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to Sandy in Fall Creek. Sandy, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning. It's such a thrill to be talking to you two. I actually have two comments, and one I'll share a recipe. I have found that some of our friends don't like that gamey taste in the venison, and I found that any marinade that has wine in it will take away enough of that gamey taste that they can accept that. But my absolute favorite thing in the world, my husband hunts with a bunch of guys, is to have them save me a couple of roasts, and then for all the hunters and their wives, I make sauerbraten, and venison roast makes absolutely the best sauerbraten. And if you want my recipe, I'd share it.
Is it a real long one, or is it, Sandy, or is it pretty straightforward?
It's pretty straightforward. It takes 4 days to make, but it's pretty straightforward.
it's sitting for 4 days in the marinade, right? Or for 3 days, 2 to 3 days in the marinade, and I did that for the game feed this year, and you're absolutely right, and... Just to bring up another point with German recipes, I find that a lot of game, the affinity for multicultural, you know, South Asian and Asian and German, and it works really well with wild game. And it just to expand your horizons, it's really kind of those flavors really go well. And sauerbraten, and we made schnitzel as well, made Jäger schnitzel, which is venison pounded out. So I love your idea, and I absolutely agree, and it's delicious.
Yeah. So what all's involved in it? Give me the edited version.
Okay, the edited version is you use equal parts of water and vinegar to cover up the venison, and then I use pickling spice with a little bit, with one or two extra bay leaves and onion, and that's the marinade. And I also put the pickling spice in like a tea ball so it doesn't get all over the place.
Yeah.
And then just be sure you turn that meat every day, and then when it comes to roasting it, you just roast it, but you save the juices, and you make gravy with the juices, and I use crushed ginger snaps to thicken the gravy.
Oh.
And that gives you that wonderful sweet and sour stuff.
Oh.
In the sweet and sour flavor. And then I make bread dumplings to serve with that.
Well, aren't you? Boy, I bet people love coming to your place.
Never had anybody turn it down for the venison.
Well, what about those ginger snaps, did you say? Yeah, what about that, Joel?
That's classic. It's a classic addition to the sauce. Once you've reduced the vinegar and concentrated the flavors and put in some ginger snaps, it really gives, like she said, that sweet and sour. It's wonderful.
Oh, man, that sounds just great, Sandy. Thanks so much for sharing that. Appreciate it very much. Marty in Duluth, Minnesota. We'll go to you next. Hi, Marty.
Hi, good morning. Thanks. So a grouse smacked into our window recently, and I can't give you anything any more specific about how my husband cooked it other than he wrapped it in bacon. And the legs were excellent. The breast was so tough, his mouth started to hurt as he was chewing it. So please give us a little primer on the best way to cook a grouse so that you can eat all of it comfortably.
Yeah.
That's like, excuse me, that's like wild turkey, too. It's incredibly strong, incredibly tough. I brine it. And I think we talked last year about brining. I do 1/3 cup table salt, 1/3 cup sugar, and 2 quarts of water. That's the ratio that I use for brining. And I would soak the whole bird if it's muscled out, if it's just the breast out, I would soak those for probably 4 to 6 hours or even a little bit longer. And it's just wonderful. It totally tenderizes it, makes it totally edible and succulent, and you wouldn't have that tough problem. It's amazing.
And, you know, sometimes it works just to separate them out.
Absolutely. Don't try to cook the whole bird.
Don't try to cook the whole bird. Don't cook it all at the same time or the same length is what I guess I'm trying to say here.
Right.
Because the legs, you know.
It doesn't do much walking, put it that way. So the legs are more tender in this case than the breast. And it does a lot of drumming and a lot of flying, and that's where all the energy is. And so the more muscle is used, the tougher it is. And the more you have to change the cooking technique to fit that, how tough or tender the meat is.
And it is the other way around with turkey.
Exactly. They do a lot of running. They don't like to fly. And so the breast is definitely more tender, but it's still tough in terms of what you compare to domestic turkey.
Yeah, my good friend of mine, Bob Cooney, likes to put the legs and, you know, all in the pressure cooker.
Sure.
And do it that way. Marty, does that help? Oh, we lost her. Oh, sorry, I wasn't paying attention here. Marty, thanks again for calling. I appreciate your call very much. And I'd forgotten about the fact that with grouse, the breast is the tougher of the...
Exactly. And that's that's how a lot of people get grouse, too, is picture windows.
It is probably my favorite...
It's amazing.
It is my favorite wild bird.
I like it better than pheasant.
Yeah, I do too.
Well, they have a better diet, I think.
Yeah, they probably do. Well, you can join in again, 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. I'm going to get to Dave and Broadhead in just a second, but a reminder, our guest today is Chef Joel Olson, nationally recognized culinary instructor, talking cooking wild game. We're going to get into his game feed a little bit more, too, as we move along. Certainly looking forward to your questions, comments, and experiences at 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer. Our engineer today, Sarah Hopeful. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at wild game cooking and fish as well with our guest today, Chef Joel Olson. He's a great guy, a wonderful chef, and it's wonderful to have him with us today. Join in at 800-642-1234. Dave and Broadhead, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Well, I just had a question. You'd made the comment that, you know, like geese and ducks and pheasants and stuff should be cooked completely and they shouldn't be medium rare or anything, but I've always cooked duck breasts. I'll pan fry them in butter or something like that, and then put like a liqueur or a bourbon over them and flambe them, and then make a sauce to put over them. But then I just slice them into pieces, and they're like steak. I mean, they're still kind of pink and medium rare in the middle. And I'm just curious, number one, if that's safe, and number two, if you can do something like that with a goose breast, or whether you'd have to, like, you know, section it or something so that you could actually get it done.
I've had duck like that, too. You're right, it's absolutely delicious. And you've probably been doing it that way for years and never gotten sick. But in terms of just in terms of general food safety and that, it's recommended to cook it till it's 165 degrees, until it's well done, just to make sure there's nothing. But, yeah, for goose, you'd want to. And, again, I've done that as well. I love it when it's slightly underdone. But I'm not advocating that everybody do that, because you should take it up to temperature, essentially. But, yeah, goose, you'd want to cut it more into steaks, so you could do the same technique with goose, but cut it more into slabs, so you'd have more of a size of a duck breast, so more manageable size instead of trying to cook the whole thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. Does that help, Dave?
Yeah, that helps. And I know goose tends to be a little tougher than duck sometimes, and that's why I wonder, too, you know, if you, it's like you said, if you either don't cook it enough or you cook it till it falls apart, otherwise it can be like shoe leather.
And you know, Dave, one of the things I've done that has, I borrowed from Cy Littleby's Guide to Cooking Wild Game once a long, long time ago, where he said he liked to put his geese in a pot of water, cold water, bring it up to just to the point of boiling, and then take it out and prepare it. And you will be amazed at kind of what comes to the top of that water over that process. And you think, oh, that's stuff that I would have been actually cooking into my meat.
Just like when you're making stock and stuff comes to the top of the pot when you're boiling bones, it's the same thing. It gets rid of a lot of the impurities, a lot of that nasty flavor, and it's a great technique.
Yeah, so something to think about, Dave. Thanks. Tammy and Mason, your turn. Hi, Tammy. Tammy, are you there? I thought she was there. Let's see.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. What's on your mind today?
Okay, my husband went and, you know, he got a wild turkey. He deboned it and stuff, and I've marinated it now in milk for 24 hours like my grandmother always does. And I was wondering, how else can I cook it? Because he's already separated the legs from the breast and deboned it.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. And soaking something in meat, the lactic acid helps tenderize the meat as well. So that's a great technique especially for I like it for birds. Going back to some of the Asian, like there's a if you heard of larb, which basically is minced meat salad, basically. So chop it up or cook it and then chop it up after it's cooked and mix it with some soy sauce, a little brown sugar, maybe a little bit of ginger. Some scallions or chives. If you still have, we've been covering our chives through this cold weather. I still have chives because I just hate to give up on at least one thing in the garden. That's one possibility. I don't know if that helps. I really love to go to especially Asian ingredients and Asian recipes for game.
Tammy, what were you thinking about?
Well, I was thinking about roasting it with my parsley and some Old Bay on there, and maybe a little bit of brown sugar.
Sure. It'll taste like Old Bay, and that's fine. It's one of those ingredients that's what it tastes like, and if you like it, hey, that's wonderful.
Yeah, you're not going to have any problem with that. And
no.
The fact that it's all deboned and everything, your leg meats, they should be fine. I mean, it's all cut up, right? Tammy, or is it?
Yeah, it's all cut up and deboned and everything. And I was wondering, do I cook it for like an hour at like 250?
I would go 350, and then I would cook it in a covered like casserole or a Pyrex dish until you can shred it with the fork, and just cook it until it's fork tender, and then you know it's not only done, but it's just going to be tender and delicious, and you can do anything you want with it at that point in time.
Yep, for sure. There you go. Thank you so much for calling, Tammy. Mike in Madison, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi, guys. How's it going today?
Good. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm a avid smoker of meats, and I keep hearing about brining and how it keeps things from drying out. I've never had that problem. What I've done is with something like bear, I'll take that into just a normal beef rub, wrap it in cellophane overnight, real tight, and I set that in the fridge. And my question is the salt from that rub that I'm putting on there, is that what is actually almost creating its own brine?
It won't penetrate just sitting on the outside. It's just creating a crust, a flavorful crust. So you need, it needs to be, you need a liquid that's going to, because it exchange, the salt and the sugar exchange liquid with the cells when it's sitting in the brine. That's what part of the brining is. It actually penetrates and goes into the different cells and they exchange. So some of the salt and sugar go into the meat, with my brine anyway, or just salt brines work as well. But that just makes a really wonderful crust on the outside of your bear or whatever you're smoking.
Yeah, and just fine.
Absolutely.
Yeah, to do it that way. So you you have your own smoker, I bet.
Yeah. Yes, I do.
So,
got a couple of them.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're you know what you're up to, Mike. Thanks a lot for calling. Let's go to Bev in Rhinelander. Hi, Bev.
Hi. I have a bunch of skinless pheasant breasts in the freezer.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to bake them, but any suggestions as to how to do that without having them dry out?
Sure. Any problems with dairy? Any lactose problems in your household?
No.
One of my favorite things to do with pheasant is to cook it in cream and some onion or some leeks. Just simmer it gently, and it's insanely amazing. It's cooked in cream, basically, in butter fat. So, and just simmer it, and it just until it's. And actually, and what I've done is I've brined it as well. And I don't brine everything, but I do find that brining is a technique that I do a lot when I'm doing the game feed and doing game. Because it really helps take some of the gaminess out, and also tender it, and just sweetens the meat. But I just simmer it, and it's just divine.
And you wouldn't simmer that. How long would you simmer that?
I'd say 35, 45 minutes,
yeah,
somewhere in there.
Yeah, it wouldn't go an hour.
No. So it's tender.
And there's... And you could also, I guess, you could do it in the oven.
You could bake it at 350 for about the same amount of time.
I've done that, and I've actually I like to make up a little dressing.
Sure.
And put it on top of the dressing, or actually we take a couple of breasts maybe and put them together and sort of have, and then you can even bind them up with the dressing, and that works really good.
I'm getting hungry.
Oh, man. Bev, does that help?
Yes, it does.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Well, Sane in Marinesco, Michigan. Are you there?
Yeah, hello.
Hi there. What can we do for you today?
All right, just a tip that I like to do is with fish and venison is soak it in milk, and it pulls out the blood and makes it taste a lot cleaner.
Yeah.
It works well. Definitely, that's a great technique.
And you soak it, like, overnight in the fridge, or...?
The longer... You can't really over-soak it.
Yeah.
It just gets more tender, and definitely not... overnight is fine, for sure.
Thank you very much for calling. Matt emailed that he made a venison stroganoff the other day, and it was delicious, but he wished the meat was more tender. He used the tenderloin of the deer. I don't know how...
I still have that.
Yeah, how you still have that.
Well, unless it's from this year, right?
Any tips? Gosh, with tenderloin, I wonder if he overcooked he must have overcooked the venison.
Yep, I would say that it probably, instead of just searing it till it's just barely done, it was cooked in the liquid, and so it got into that middle ground that makes it tough. So I would just like sear it and make almost like make a stroganoff sauce to have with tenderloin as opposed to putting the tenderloin in the sauce.
Right. That's kind of how I do it, with some good noodles. And...
Oh, yeah. Whatever.
But I really like venison stroganoff. It's a wonderful dish.
Mushrooms and sour cream. And what?
How can you go wrong with that? Brady and Osseo, we'll go to you next. Hi, Brady.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's on your mind?
I was going to suggest corn. Venison, anything corn. Corned heart, corned roast, anything made that way.
Yeah,
it's wonderful. And also corned goose, too, corned goose breast.
I
was talking to an old-timer. I was fishing up at Devil's Lake a few years ago, and we got talking about hunting and snow geese, and he said, I corn all that. He said, I corn it all. And I've done it. It's wonderful.
So the corning, what's involved with the – what are you using there for
corn? It's basically a brine.
Yeah.
Once again, we're talking about a brine. Sorry, folks. I don't have brine on my brain today, but it works. But it's a marinated brine and flavoring like the pickling. It's kind of like what you do with the sour button in a way, but over a longer period and with slightly different spices.
You can do it wrong, too. I mean, well, I don't know about sauerbraten. I know my brother Dennis made some Hasenpfeffer once out of, he had rabbit, mm-hmm. and of course, and I don't know what he did, but it was not edible. It was so strong. And so he took it out to his dog, who will eat anything, and the dog wouldn't eat
Oh,
it.
No.
And when the dog won't eat it.
That's something.
You know there's something going on there. Oh, but when it's done right, it can be great. Brady, thanks again for calling. Appreciate your call. So on this game feed, let's go back to that for a minute. So you have something called small foods. Is
right.
that an appetizer?
Yeah, that was we put that out first, just for people to nibble on, you know, while we're doing the big food.
And we haven't talked about fish at all, but you had a lemon ricotta and panfish
dip. Yeah, it's wonderful. So basically taking panfish, and I have like about three people go through the panfish. I have one person, then a second person looking for bones, because one of my pet peeves is to have bones. And you say we go through at least three times, and then basically poach it, just cook in a little bit of water and lemon juice and just for a minute, and then crumble it up and mix it with some ricotta and a little bit of heavy cream and lemon zest, and it's just real simple, but it's delicious.
Oh, and there's one, and I'm not even sure how to pronounce it, Utapensi?
Oh, that's a great thing. Glad you brought that up, because it's a great way to use venison sausage, like you have, like the summer sausage. You cut it up into chunks. And then you make a little indentation in the chunk, so like a kind of open it like a butterfly without opening it up, and you stuff in some onions, and then you put them in a jar, and then you pour vinegar over the top of it, of extra vinegar and water and pickling spices, and let it sit for 2 or 3 days, and it's a great way to use some of your venison sausage or venison sticks that you've got, and if you're tired of just having cheese and sausage,
so
it's a Czechoslovakian.
Yeah, I was going to say that's Czech.
Yep.
So you cube that sausage up, dig a hole.
Yeah, make a little butterfly, basically. Cube it up about an inch piece, and then you know, butterfly it so that towards the rind from the center out, and put a little bit of onion in it, and then pack it in jars with some small red peppers, or not spicy, but sweet bell peppers, and some more onions, and pour a pickling spice over the top of it and let it sit. And I have a friend visiting from Czech. He's a professor down in Oklahoma. He came back. He was here at the university and came up and visited a couple of weeks ago. And he was like, oh, this is just what, like at home. He said, this is just like if he was back home. So,
and did I pronounce it right?
Yeah, Utapensi.
Utapensi.
Yeah.
No key in there, is there?
Yeah, I think it's Utapensi.
Utapensi.
Yeah.
Well, I like that. I like that one a lot. And you had panfish and corn chowder too.
Absolutely.
You had a whole soup.
Yeah, I had soup. Yeah, we had like five different soups or six soups, and we're thinking if you think of an ounce each. You know, I told people if you see something on the menu that you really want to go for it, because there wasn't enough. There wasn't the 60 portions of every single dish. So get there if you want to get it, because even if you had 1 ounce of everything, it's like, you know, 15 quarter pounders. So that's a lot of darn food.
So the panfish and corn chowder, you just made up some corn chowder and
put in some panfish. Exactly. The same thing went through it, so there wasn't any bones. Added it at the end, and it's amazingly good. Simple.
I like that. How many people did you have at this event?
It was, I think we had about 85. Yeah. We never actually sat down and we didn't do the analysis. Usually we sit down and do analysis after it on Sunday, but we didn't. We just kind of, hey, about 85, I'd say.
About 85.
Yeah.
And you had a pressed venison you slow roasted some venison?
And that is, those of you that are familiar with the jellied beef loaf, which is one of my favorite luncheon meats.
Uh-huh.
It's like, or head cheese or whatever you want to call it. It was very similar to that. It was just amazing.
So what do you do with that? You shred the venison?
You cook it, and then there's enough. And then I use some gelatin. I use some powdered gelatin. And shredded it up and then put it in a pan with some liquid that had the gelatin dissolved in, and then chilled it. And so it was like a jellied beef loaf. It was like, it was not like Jell-O, but it had the gelatin around it, like a aspic kind of thing.
And there was a honey soy sauce kind of.
It was wonderful. Yeah, it's a Korean. It's based on a Korean recipe that I have, so. It's just, yeah, so I really go all over the map when I'm looking for recipes and trying to try different ingredients and stuff like that, so, which has been fun for all my classes as well. And a lot of the kids' camps I do in the summer, which is, and during the year, I do a lot of international flavors, international camps, international street food and things like that. So I'm picking up ideas, and as I'm doing my research, I make a note, running note for stuff for Game Feed, and I'm already working on next year's Game Feed, so.
And you've got something that would call the Panfish Station.
Yeah, Steve Owen, I got to give a shout out. He's from Sun Prairie. He's phenomenal. He and his family they set up a little fryer, and that's one of the highlights of the game feed is fresh, crisp panfish.
It's right there that instant.
Right there, it's like
you got people standing around waiting to just get their little fingers on it.
Exactly, and I don't remember how many fillets he had, like 150 fillets or something this last year. So he's just wonderful. So I get my snapping turtle from him as well.
Do you on the barbecue you do grill?
Yeah, yes,
too.
I did. I had a grilling station and wanted to do some different barbecue sauces. And basically, I just had like a pit venison. Basically, cooked it, just grilled a big chunk of venison and a big chunk of pork, and separately, and then just sliced them really thinly and had different assorted barbecue sauces and.
And a tostada bar.
Well, that was kind of fun. I was going to do a taco. Tacos have been a big thing. I've been doing a lot of taco classes around the country and been really tacos and tequila and stuff. And so I thought taco would be too much. And so tostada is an open-faced taco. So I used little tostada chips so people didn't have to have a big old taco. So, yeah, and there's a recipe in there for turkey legs where I cooked them and then shredded them, mixed them with some red pepper. And that was a great way to use turkey legs.
Yeah, I used pickled pepper, didn't you?
Pickled peppers that I had, yeah. So just pickled peppers, and you can even buy a jar of pickled peppers and chop it up. And if you need to add a little bit of sugar to the brine to make it, or to the pickling spice to make it so sweet and sour, and just kind of add that. And that's been a big thing now lately, too, of those of you that are following food. People are using pickle juice for everything. It's just saving it and everything but brushing your teeth, I think, that's being used for. So.
Oh, I love it. And I want to go back to the small foods because there was I think this was a non-game one. You had a Mediterranean bean pate.
Yeah, that's funny. This is a quick story with that. Living out in Washington, I was doing a bridal shower, and I was talking with the mother of the bride about a menu, and I said, I have this bean dip recipe. She goes, Pop, we don't want bean dip. Oh, no, we don't want bean dip. And I said a couple minutes later, well, I have this recipe for Mediterranean bean pate. And she's like, well, that sounds great. So that's the evolution of it. Of that, so it's been.
And that sounded fine.
It was the same recipe, but just different name. Yeah, so.
Oh, does the name, certainly the preparation and how it looks.
Absolutely.
Is huge. The name, too?
I think so, absolutely. It's in writing and when writing classes and doing, doing menus for classes, it's all on how it sounds, on how it rolls off the page into your mind, into your memory, and how you think it might taste when you're reading the menu item, like when you go to a restaurant. Well, that sounds good, so it's important.
How do you teach your classes, by the way? Do people do cooking?
Absolutely. I'm all hands-on. And the name of our website, if I can mention it, it's Hemma Chef, HEMMACHEF. .com, and we do private parties. I do in-home classes, kids' birthday parties. I do, if anybody's interested in speaking at a wild, anything about wild game. I've done stuff with the Wisconsin Lake Alliance last year. They were wonderful up there, and really had a really fun time with them. So yeah, just give me a call or email us at hemmachef@gmail.com or go to our website. So it's all, I'm totally in participation. Even the kids are using 8-inch chef's knives and they're doing it. I don't demonstrate a lot of stuff because I find if people are going to goof it up, even if I show them how to do it, they're going to goof it up anyway. So I just I help them while they're doing it.
Well, I was thinking that when Scott and I were teaching some wild game classes, we had we had 6 weeks, I think.
Oh, wow.
So at one of the schools where they have, great setups with, many stations.
Sure.
And we just would get the class split up into different groups of, say, two or three people. And then we'd talk about grouse one time. And
sure.
then we'd give them a recipe and there'd be like eight people and they'd get the different – split up the ingredients that we provided the grouse, and then they'd come back the next week and make it.
Oh, wow.
And then we'd start in on venison or goose or whatever. But then there would be usually around eight stations, so there'd be about eight different dishes for people.
Oh, that's the hallmark, too, of the classes that I teach is you do all this cooking, and then there's a feast at the end. You get to eat everything at the end of the class. I kind of discourage people from eating during the class just because put it in your hand to mouth, and you have to, and for those people that have taken my classes know it's like wash your hands. I watch big time. And the years of bartending and my degree in sociology, I pay attention if somebody's lick their fingers. I can see it out of the corner of my eye. So. And it's not a penalty, but you have to go wash your hands.
You got to go wash your hands. Well, so And for a game feed, do you recommend? I mean, have you taught how to do one of those, or you sort of do, I guess?
Yeah, I've never actually taught, but I would be delighted to, if anybody ever wanted to. I would love to do a seminar on putting together a game feed. And guys do it all the time. I know my dad at the Marshfield Elks, and they did a wonderful game feed and stuff. And it's, you know, and everybody has a great time. It's a great fundraiser. So it's you keep doing what you're doing. But if you ever want to, you know, change it up and get some different recipes, I'd be happy to talk with you.
And it's and you're 60 for 60, 60 and 60. I forget how you
60
60 recipes for your 60th year as on this earth. How long did that celebration last? When does it start?
Does it include cleaning up? Because we kept the bar open for weeks while we're cleaning up. It takes a while to take everything down, so it's fun. It's fun, and what I really enjoy too is the camaraderie with friends that come over to help. And it's not a party, but it's an incredible fellowship and camaraderie with people that love food and like hanging out. And so it's a real blessing to have such great friends that help with this for free and enjoy it.
I was thinking about that too for mine. I'd have probably five other people helping during the course of the day, and it's so much fun. There's excitement connected with it all day long.
Absolutely, there's a buzz in the air, and then I have people. I didn't know you could help. Let us know next year if you can help. So sure.
Could we repeat, or could you repeat, I'm sorry, the brine recipe, that typical brine recipe you use? Listeners wanted to know that.
Okay, it's 1/3 cup table salt, just, you know, regular salt, 1/3 cup granulated sugar, white sugar, and 2 quarts of water.
And that's all there is to it.
And you can tweak it. You could use orange juice. You could use beer. You could, you can add seasonings. But that's the basic.
But keep
brine.
keep the third.
2 quarts.
Yeah. And 2 quarts. Third, and 2 quarts of, and the 2 quarts could be anything.
Yep.
Well, now I'm hungry,
Joel.
This has been one. And again, it's Hemma is like HEMMA.
Yep.
Right. HemmaChef.com. Or HemmaChef@gmail.com if you want to email.
Yes.
.com. And you probably have a schedule that you're on, but you can go anywhere.
I can. I do, and I love to travel. I just got back from a week teaching in Washington, D.C. I love food and love traveling and love talking to people about food.
And not only wild game, but anything.
Absolutely.
I knew that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Been a great pleasure to have you back, and you'll come back and be with us again, I hope.
I would love to.
All right. Chef Jeff Olson, or Joel Olson. Good grief. How do I?
That's common.
Where does this come from?
It's been happening for years, so that's fine. It's a compliment.
Joel Olson is, he's a nationally recognized chef. He's taught all over the U.S., probably a little outside the U.S.
Not so much.
But he'll pretty much go anywhere you want him to go. And he teaches classes on cooking of all different types. So it's fun. Go to HemmaChef.com, or you can email him at HemmaChef@gmail.com. And if you want to talk to him some more, or on his page, you're going to see a lot of information at HemmaChef.com. He'll be back, and we will talk with him once again. You know, one of the things that's kind of fun to do is get out on the water. I've done this many a time, paddling. And maybe you're on the Wisconsin River and you get to a sandbar and you have some food with you. And then you do maybe a little grill or something like that. And you do some cooking right on the Wisconsin River or on some little island on one of the many wonderful lakes that we have, but you got to get there by typically canoe or kayak. Most of the time that happens. And speaking of that, Darren Bush is coming back to talk with us next about paddling in the fall season. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.